Chapter 30. While L'Enfant Plaza metro station fit the bill for best terror target, and it was the closest station to art galleries and the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, the station itself sat in the middle of the ugliest office buildings in Washington. Jonathan wondered sometimes if the architects were Soviet-era refugees from Eastern Europe. Canyons of flat facades and rectangular windows. A national chain had recently opened a hotel atop the station, but the designers of the public spaces favored dainty and uncomfortable over comfort or utility. Jonathan had no idea how long his team would have to hang around. In a gesture that was equal parts defiance and efficiency, they took the metro to L'Enfant Plaza. The area afforded limited local parking, and where it was available, 6-foot height restrictions applied within the garages, a little tight for the Batmobile. It was going to be a long day, or several days. They emerged to sunlight on 7th Street and Maryland Avenue's southwest a little after 3:45 p.m. Kitted out in 5'11 tactical pants and shirts, sidearms in the open and badges clipped to their belts, they looked like the federal agents they were pretending to be. Each carried an equipment bag, with a vest and short-barreled rifle inside. Jonathan wore his Colt 1911 high on his right hip, and 4 spare mags on his left. His radio rested behind his holster. He reached around and pressed the key to activate the wireless bud in his ear. He flipped the switch to Vox.
"Mother Hen, do you copy?"
"Loud and clear," she said. "Nice to have you back."
The metro system had been built long before anyone thought of digital communication as it existed today, and as such, the tunnels were black holes for radio traffic.
"Any updates on our friends?"
"A possible," she said, "but nothing firm. They might or might not have had a late lunch at McDonald's in Bethesda."
"What's the nearest metro station?"
"Friendship Heights."
"Are cameras working there or not?"
"Or not," she said.
"Murphy rides again," Jonathan said. "Okay, well, we're here at L'Enfant Plaza. Let us know everything when you know it."
He reached behind and turned his radio back to PTT.
"What are we doing, boss?"
Boxers asked.
"This is not what we do. Our mission is accomplished. The Kendall boys are whole and healthy."
"Let's walk and talk," Jonathan said.
He pointed across 7th Street southwest and led the way toward a little patch of green called Hancock Park. Red metal chairs sat around red metal tables at random intervals, designed to be as uncomfortable as possible. 4 millennials in expensive business casual suits cut off their conversation and stood as the team from Security Solutions approached.
"Pigs in a blanket," one of them said.
"Fry 'em like bacon,"
said another through her lip ring as she walked away.
"Eat shit and die,"
Boxers replied.
"Spreading love and cheer wherever you go,"
Jonathan said. They assumed the kids' places around one of the little tables.
"Are you ignoring Big Guy's question?" Gail asked. "What are we doing? What is our plan? Every time it comes up, you divert to something else."
Jonathan held up his hands.
"What do you want me to say? It's obvious, isn't it? We react."
"We're not cops, Dig,"
Boxers said.
"You want us to do what the real cops aren't willing to do."
"Since when do you back away from danger?"
Jonathan challenged.
"Don't even think of playing a coward card with me,"
Big Guy said.
"There are a million different ways that this can go wrong. Let's start with the fact that it's the middle of the day and we're out in the open. Covert is our thing, not, hey, look at me."
"You have to look at the flip side," Dawkins said. "How do you live with yourself if you do nothing?"
"No lectures from the new guy, okay?"
Boxers said.
"But how do I live with it? The same way that the FB friggin' I will live with it. We've already done our job."
"No," Gail said, "we haven't. We have knowledge and the ability to save many lives. Harry is right. We can't do nothing.
I can't sit by.
Dawkins leaned into the table.
I've got another wrinkle, he said. Friendship Heights is on the Red Line. The Red Line doesn't come here to L'Enfant. To get here, they'll have to change trains in Metro Center, which is also a pretty tasty target. Maybe we're in the wrong place.
Or maybe they'll split up,
Boxer said.
Or maybe a thousand other things, Jonathan said. We can second guess without end.
He scratched the sides of his head with both hands, his tell for frustration.
Look, what's going to happen is going to happen, and it's going to unfold the way it unfolds. The best we can do...
Scorpion, Scorpion, Mother Hen.
This sounds hopeful, Jonathan said.
He flipped the switch to Vox.
Go ahead.
I don't have visuals, she said, but the fare cards I flagged yesterday have just entered Friendship Heights.
Stand by,
Jonathan said. He flipped the radio switch back to PTT.
I don't spend a lot of time riding the subway. If I recall, once they're in the system, they'll be lost to us until they leave their final station stop.
Dawkins nodded aggressively.
Exactly. They can do whatever transfers they want without using the cards again. But to get out, they have to swipe their cards when they leave the station.
Jonathan keyed his mic again.
Mother Hen, we're going to be uber-dependent on the facial recognition from now on. I don't know what kind of fine-tuning you can do, but for the time being, I don't care about anything that happens outside the metro system.
Got it, she said.
Jonathan said, to be clear, they're going to have to transfer to get to us. If they transfer at Metro Center, they'll be on blue or orange lines. But if they wait to transfer at Gallery Place, they'll get to L'Enfant Plaza on the yellow or green.
Don't forget silver, Dawkins said off the air.
Oh, yeah, Jonathan said on the air. And don't forget silver.
It had been easier just to say watch every line, Benice said.
Jonathan could hear the smile in her voice. Jonathan opened up his equipment bag and pulled out his vest and rifle.
How long ago did they board the train? He asked.
4 minutes ago, according to Metro's website. It's a 17-minute ride to Metro Center, then 5 minutes to L'Enfant Plaza. Total of 37 minutes, if everything's running on time.
Oh, I'm confident that they'll be on time,
Jonathan said with a wry chuckle.
This will be the one day out of the whole year when everything will run on time.
He looked to his crew.
Time to go to work. Any questions?
They had all started kitting up as well.
Would you have answers if we did?
Boxers quipped. As they rose from the chairs and headed back into the station, Jonathan said,
Once we're inside, we need to split up, but we stay on the upper level. The trains come in on different levels, but they can only exit from the upper level.
How many entrances?
Gale asked.
4, Dawkins said. This one, plus the Plaza Mall, 7th and C, and D Street.
The architects who designed the metro system got the aesthetics right. Reminiscent of the best of the Paris Underground, the L'Enfant Plaza station featured soaring ceilings and side platforms. The acoustics were always loud, but Jonathan figured that tourists had to be impressed by what they saw, especially if they were coming from the claustrophobic New York subway platforms. But even the largest spaces have choke points, and here those points were the turnstiles and ticket machines. Now that the museums were closing and the workday was ending, the crush of people, the crush of targets, was huge. It was as if someone had opened a human spigot. Commuters showed little patience with hesitant tourists and no interest in lessening their confusion. Their cop costumes allowed them to bypass the normal entryway to the platforms and gain access through a swinging gate that normally was reserved for people in wheelchairs.
Everybody go to Vox, Jonathan said. Mother Hen, radio check.
You're scratchy, but I can hear you, she said.
She sounded scratchy, too. She ran through a radio check for each of them. Jonathan had one last chat with his team. They spoke face to face, but he also wanted it out on the air for Venice to hear.
You know what these guys look like. We know that they'll be carrying blue backpacks. Station yourselves near the turnstiles and watch. If you see one or both of them, sing out, and the rest will come running.
Or just shoot the sons of bitches,
Boxer said.
Just be damn sure who you're shooting, Jonathan said. He wasn't sure whether or not Big Guy was kidding, so he opted to believe he was being serious.
Watch your background. A dead bad guy isn't a good thing if the good guy behind him gets hit with the same bullet.
Boxer said, feigning interest. Don't hurt the innocent. Interesting safety tip. Thanks for sharing.
You know, Gale said, if these guys hit this place and we somehow don't see them, we're going to be among the victims.
7 minutes to Metro Center if they're running on time, Vinice said.
Split up, people, Jonathan ordered. We're going to do this. We're going to stop them.
They left Gale to cover Maryland Avenue and 7th Street, the spot they'd been standing at, and wandered off to the three other compass points. Jonathan planted himself at the ticket station closest to the 7th and C Streets exit. As he looked in toward the swirling crowd, he marveled at how little he could actually see. It was a wall of people. Their movement looked more peristaltic than deliberate. He couldn't imagine the chaos, the carnage of trampled people, if a panic ignited in here. He noticed, with no small degree of sadness, regretting the way life used to be, that despite his vest and firearms, he was virtually invisible to the commuters and tourists. The constant threat of terrorism, particularly in city centers such as this, had become that commonplace. But a Metro Transit cop did notice. Jonathan noted that he was being eyeballed by the guy a full 30 seconds before the cop started his way, talking into his radio as he approached. Even as the cop got closer, Jonathan wasn't sure whether his uniform was black or navy blue.
Afternoon, the cop said. The name Weiser was stitched into his vest. Mind if I ask you for some ID?
In Jonathan's ear, Vinice said,
3 minutes to Metro Center.
Sure, Jonathan said. He pulled his creds from his back pocket and fingered it open with one hand. Special Agent Neil Bonner.
Weiser barely glanced at it.
What's up? He asked. Are you expecting trouble?
We're not sure, Jonathan said.
Be careful, boss,
Boxer said in his earbud.
Don't overcommit.
Jonathan wasn't sure about the next step. He could use the additional set of eyes, as many additional sets as he could get. But Officer Weiser hadn't yet seen his 25th birthday and wouldn't have authority to be of meaningful help.
We've got a pair of fugitives we're looking for, and we think they might be on one of the incoming trains.
Jonathan liked the lie, so he sold it by sharing a picture of the twins from his phone.
We think they'll be carrying blue backpacks.
Are the backpacks a problem?
Weiser asked.
I hope not, Jonathan said. That's the identifier I have. That's how I'll know it's them.
2 minutes to Metro Center.
Have you shared this with my command staff?
Weiser asked.
Jonathan forced a laugh. Yeah, right. Right after my afternoon dinner with Director Rivers, I called up your chief to give him a heads up.
Weiser laughed too.
Yours is not to reason why, right?
Exactly.
Want me to pass the word to the others on my shift? We can keep an eye out, too.
How many on duty are here in the station?
Weiser said, right now, me and two others. Well, one other, really, because one of them's driving the desk in the office. It was a tempting offer.
Don't do it, Scorpion,
Boxer said.
Jonathan said, sure, we could use the extra eyes. Tell your counterpart to look for twins with backpacks.
I can't detain somebody for being a twin, Weiser said. Hell, I'm a twin.
Break, break, Vinice said. I have a positive hit from a camera on at least one of the twins getting off the red line at Metro Center.
What else do you have?
Jonathan asked.
For Weiser's sake, he pointed to the bud in his ear.
That's all of it, Vinice said. For now.
I copy,
Jonathan said. The clock was ticking down to nothing now. The target would either be Metro Center or here. If he'd guessed wrong, then there you go.
A lot of people would die, and the perpetrators would get away with it, at least until Wolverine could take care of her custodial duties. Jonathan stepped away from Weiser without saying anything more. Yes, it was probably rude, but he had work to do.
Mother Hen said it's a 5-minute ride from Metro Center to here. That means any one of the trains that arrive in the next 10 minutes.
Behind him, he could hear Weiser saying something about twins into his radio. According to the electronic sign near the tracks, on the far side of the escalator from where Jonathan stood, the next Blue Line train would arrive in 2 minutes, and the next Orange Line would arrive in 3. Then there'd be a Silver in 5. Any one of them could have the Kadyrov brothers on board. Ditto the trains that were arriving downstairs. People swarmed the tracks, awaiting their turn to climb aboard, even as others were trying to detrain. This whole plan suddenly seemed like a very bad idea. Hopeless.
Mother Hen?
Jonathan asked.
Still nothing. They still have not used their fare cards to leave a station.
From behind, commuters continued to swarm in. Some headed to the blue, orange, and silver tracks straight ahead, and others flowed down the escalators to the green and yellow lines. The suspended sign announced the current status of the incoming Blue Line train as ARR, arriving. Even from this far away, call it 50 yards, Jonathan could feel the pulse of the air pressure as the 8-car train cleared the tunnel and slowed to a stop.
Mother Hen, do you have good images from this station?
Better than most, she said. More cameras working than not.
The doors of the train opened, and people surged forward.
It's like watching a worm shit people,
Boxer said.
And every one of them is wearing a backpack,
Gale observed. The wall of people targeting Jonathan's turnstile moved like a tsunami, everyone jockeying for position to get their fare card into the slot before the guy behind them could beat them to the punch. So many faces, so many backpacks. But the backpacks didn't matter, did they? If the Kadyrov brothers got this far, got as far as the exit turnstile, they wouldn't have the backpacks with them. They would have dropped them somewhere in the station.
Scorpion, Gunslinger, this is a lot of people.
Hang in there, Jonathan said. It's the best we've got. Thor?
I feel like a rock in a stream, he said.
As more people flowed into the station, Jonathan realized that the exodus had slowed to a trickle. People entered at their own schedule and pace, but left in clumps. As the Blue Line train left, Jonathan felt a sense of hopelessness. The brothers could have been tying their shoes right in front of him and not have been noticed. Maybe if he fired a shot in the air, he could start a stampede and clear the station that way, and maim hundreds in the process. The suspended sign announced that the Orange Line was now arriving, and the scene from the Blue Line repeated itself. The train, with 9 cars this time, glided to a stop, and the doors opened. People swarmed. It was all barely controlled.
"I've got them," Vinice said. "They just got off the train."
Jonathan's heart rate doubled.
"Where are they? Which car?"
I don't have that level of detail. They're moving with the crowd. I don't know which direction. I don't have my bearings. I can't orient the directions.
Weiser,
Jonathan shouted.
They're here.
How do you...
I know, okay? Get your guys,
Vinice said.
They dumped a backpack behind a short wall.
Just one?
Yes, they still have the other. They're still walking together.
Jonathan grabbed Weiser by the collar of his vest.
There's a backpack with a bomb behind a short wall. I don't even know what that means. It's a chemical agent, not explosives. You need to evacuate the station.
Jesus, I don't have that kind of...
Jonathan saw the Kadyrovs. They were walking together, showing no signs of urgency or stress. Jonathan let go of the cop.
I see them. They're headed toward me.
Headed your way,
Boxer said. This was it. Finally, it would be over. But the brothers button-hooked to their left, Jonathan's right, as they passed the escalator to the bottom level and started down.
Shit, they're going below, Jonathan said.
He took off at a run to catch them. People jammed the escalator, both sides, so he opted for the stairs. They were likewise packed.
"Federal officer," he said, pushing commuters aside, "make a hole."
In his ear, he heard someone trying to say something, but the signal couldn't get through. Not down here. At the bottom now, Jonathan was in the thick of the commuter soup.
"You almost made me fall, dickhead."
Jonathan cranked his head to see a 20-something with a congressional aide badge clipped to the pocket of his suit coat.
"Goddamn cops! No wonder!"
Jonathan pushed him aside. The Kadyrov brothers were here, somewhere. According to the electronic signs, the next train would be an 8-car Yellow Line train, and it would be arriving in 2 minutes. This was nuts. It shouldn't be this hard. Jonathan needed a better vantage point. He darted to one of the stone benches designed for tired travelers and stood on the seat. There. They'd made their way to the far end of the track. Whether the front or the rear of the train, Jonathan didn't know. They were surrounded by others, and they didn't seem to care. And the second backpack was gone. For all Jonathan knew, they'd put it directly under the bench he was standing on. Both bombs were set. All these people.
"Mother Hen, Scorpion, they need to evacuate this station."
Static. He had no idea if the message went through. 1 minute till the next train.
"Shit, shit, shit,"
Jonathan mumbled.
"Desperate measures, desperate times."
He brought his M27 to his shoulder, took a deep breath, and yelled,
"Kadyrov, don't move!"
The assembled crowd yelled, but the brothers seemed almost ready for it. At the sound of their names, they pivoted on their own axis, drew pistols, and fired. Jonathan heard 3 shots, and a lady near him fell. Jonathan was able to squeeze off 1 shot, an enormous, ear-shattering boom underground like this, before the panic consumed everything. He thought for sure that he hit one of the brothers, but the other was untouched. People screamed, some ran, some stayed still, but everybody was either pushing or being pushed. Jonathan had no shot to take. He couldn't even see his targets anymore. And the train was approaching. Lights in the floor flashed to announce the subway's arrival, and Jonathan could see the headlights approaching from inside the tunnel. Jonathan had to get to the brothers before they could get on that train. He did not want to have a shootout in such a crowded space. He pressed through the crowd, working his way back toward the Kadyrovs and the approaching subway train. A woman screamed up ahead. It was the kind of scream that spelled more than fear. It was pure terror.
"No!"
she yelled.
"Please, please, no!"
As the approaching Yellow Line train emerged from the tunnel, Jonathan got his first glimpse of a dead Kadyrov on the floor, and then he saw a live Kadyrov using a teenager as a shield. He had his arm around her throat and a pistol to her head as an older woman, presumably her mother, begged him to let her go. The instant Kadyrov saw Jonathan, he leveled the pistol at Jonathan and snapped off a shot. Essentially unaimed, the bullet passed frighteningly close. Jonathan dove behind one of the enormous concrete pillars that kept the main level of the station off of the lower level. The train slowed, just like the others had, but then it seemed to change its mind. From coasting speed, it launched off like a rocket, sending people inside the cars sprawling and increasing the panic on the platform. An ear-splitting evacuation alarm sealed the rest of that deal. Within 30 seconds, the platform was empty. Jonathan couldn't just cower here. Kadyrov was a man who wouldn't hesitate to kill thousands. A hostage wouldn't bother him a bit.
"Mr. FBI man," Kadyrov yelled, "do you want this girl to die? Can you live with that on your conscience?"
The mother pleaded,
"Please let her go. Take me instead, please."
"How about I take you too?"
Jonathan heard the modulation and the sound of Kadyrov's voice. He was moving, trying to get a better position. Jonathan shifted around his pillar.
"Are you Kassan or Aslan?"
Jonathan yelled. He dared a peek around the curve of the pillar and saw that Kadyrov was using the girl dangling from his arm to protect the left side of his body, and had the mother backing in unison to shield his right, the side that held the gun. It was a Glock, and he was trained well enough to keep his finger outside the trigger guard. It never ended well for hostage takers who accidentally blew the brains out of their hostages.
"You know my name," Kadyrov said. "Then you know that I'm not afraid of dying, or of killing."
"You've got no play here," Jonathan said. "You can let your nerve toys do their thing, but who are you going to kill? Other than yourself, of course."
As he spoke, Jonathan slid to his belly on the floor, doing his best to preserve the protection of the pillar.
"I'll take out who I take out," Kadyrov said. "Maybe just us."
Lying on his right side, Jonathan shifted his rifle to his left shoulder and scanned for a target to shoot. Center of mass was out. Any kill shot was out for right now. But with a little time and a touch of opportunity, you never knew. If Kadyrov was willing to die from his own poison, he'd have activated his bomb by now. At least, that's what Jonathan told himself. Over the squeal of the evacuation alarm, Jonathan heard boxers yell,
"Hey, Scorpion, how you doing?"
It was the fraction of an instant Jonathan needed. The sound of Big Guy's voice clearly startled Kadyrov, who whipped his head around to the source. In so doing, he lifted the teen's feet up off the ground high enough to expose his own ankle. Jonathan shot it. Kadyrov lost his grip on the girl and she dropped at his feet, exposing his entire torso. Jonathan shot him 4 times, and God only knew how many times boxers shot him. Big Guy glided down the stairs with his HK-417 still pressed to his shoulder. Without looking at Jonathan, he said,
"You okay, boss? Need a Band-Aid or anything?"
"I'm fine, thanks."
"Glad to hear it. I believe this man is as dead as any dead man I've ever seen. How's his brother?"
"At least as dead."
"Okie dokie," Boxer said. "Can we go home now?"